Welcome to Recess Duty, a podcast for educators to come together to share struggles, but also celebrate successes by sharing stories and ideas in a safe and supportive environment to collaborate with one another. Here's your host, Levi Allison.
Hey, everyone. This is Recess Duty with your host, Levi Allison. And today we're talking with early years educator with a passion for making and play, Michael Pelaggi. We'll be discussing their experience and stories in education. Thank you so much for joining us, Michael. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Got to jump in the pool for some swim team practice. So breaking the Bangkok heat, which feels pretty good.
Nice, nice. And so, Michael, for our listeners out there, tell us where you're at, what do you do, and a little bit about Michael.
So I'm currently a kindergarten teacher or year one teacher currently at NIST in Bangkok. I like the name kindergarten a little bit more because it gives that value to them being little and just exploring the world. I'm born and raised outside of Chicago, never really traveled. My mentor while student teaching taught in Hong Kong and Korea. Like, go abroad, check it out. Asia is awesome. And so I was like, well, nothing's opening in Chicago. Let's see what else I can do. So I spent a year in Tokyo for a little bit, loved to travel, a year in Germany, and then spent a summer in Kenya volunteering. My friend was down there. He said, we'd really like some teachers to help us do some teacher focus groups. So got a little bit of time around Nairobi and then a little bit in upcountry, which is super interesting. Then was back to Tokyo for 3 years, did 3 years in Yokohama. And now it's my third year at NIST in Bangkok.
Wow. You've been a lot of places.
So enjoying a little bit of traveling and nice to kind of chill it down a little bit now.
I totally understand. So, Michael, what are you excited about at the moment in today's chaotic world with COVID and quarantine, not quarantine, in the classrooms and such?
I think one of the projects we've really been working on this year, and it's been incredible to be back in the classroom and crossing fingers we stay that way, is we've really been kind of looking at what gender is and what it means for our little 5 and 6 year olds. And I was originally a tech ed major, and so I was in classes with only men and hands-on all over the place. And then I wanted to teach woodshop and drafting, but those classes were going away a little bit. And so then I switched into early years and it was only me in the entire major that was the guy. And so kind of looking at, you know, being with only men for my first part of my university into only women. And luckily at this school, we actually have some other guy early years teachers, which has been awesome. But so that's something that I can kind of connect to with all the diversity conversations. I'm a white male. We have lots of privilege. And so kind of letting those voices really being a big listener. But gender is that one thing that I can really connect with, being kind of with all men and then all women. And so that's something that I feel like I can really dig a little bit deeper into because of my personal connections. And so we've been reading tons and tons of books about just like what gender means and what does it mean to us. And kind of our conversation today was, we read a book called Dress Like a Girl. It would have been fantastic and really opening that there really is not a boy thing, girl thing, and everybody thing. And they talked about, well, I went to Zara, and another said, I went to the store that had an H and an M in it. I'm like, well, it's called H&M. And so I was pretty lucky. And so they said, well, there's always a boy section and a girl section. And a boy's like, well, I like Hello Kitty, but it was in the girl section, and I didn't understand why. Uh-huh. And to see just these conversations we're getting through these texts of them, just saying, well, if we've got everybody toys and everybody sports and we can paint our nails or have earrings and like, but I don't like saying when I was little or we used to say this about, you know, boys could do this, girls could do this. So I don't want to implant that idea. It's nice to talk about the history a little bit, but I don't want them to have that idea that there is a boy thing or a girl thing. So I try and stray away from like, when I was little, people said this. And so I was like, well, where do we see that in our 5-year-old's world? And so clothes is really perfect because they go to the store and they see the boys and they see the girls and a little bit less the toys, but the clothes is one thing they really connected with. And so behind the computer here is our little wall that we've been going with our documentation about, you know, what is a boy thing and what is a girl thing? And basically we've got girls go to the girls' bathroom and boys, we've got boys' private parts. Everything else is just everybody. Yeah. And so seeing these rich discussions has been super, super powerful. So we're actually going to team up with our middle school. Maybe they have high school too. And so they're going to have a little conversation with me and figure out, well, what did you want to do? Because I'm a white male. I only know so much. And so what did you wish you knew when you were littler? Or what kind of conversations do you think we could start with them? And maybe having them come into our classroom too and just look at what we've been learning about. So I'm really excited to connect with the service groups and our upper school.
How exciting is that to be having such rich and authentic and valuable discussions of identity so early in a learner's life? That is amazing. That is so exciting. Is there, like, have, besides in the clothing stuff, have kids talked about anything else or like revelations or any like connections or aha moments with them?
Is one thing for some of the doctors, and because, you know, they have less schema, what they've done, especially half their lives have been COVID, that they can remember at least. And so there's a few things. And of course, you know, there's some who are a little bit more egocentric, which is completely appropriate because you're 5 years old and that's how your brain works. But doctors and things is, you know, on our wall, we originally had some things where it's like, well, long hair is for girls and whatever, this is for boys. And we do this little survey and be like, well, you know, for playing soccer, like, well, who plays soccer? Who has the connection? You know, the little surf's up sign. And so, you know, some girls raise their hand and some boys do. I'm like, oh, well, that's maybe not a boy thing. And to see how open they are to be like, oh, well, actually, yeah, I can put that in the everybody side because that girl and that boy do that. So that's really an everybody thing.
Oh, so cool.
And doctors was one thing too, because a few of them were like, I think they have their, you know, family doctor. And they go, well, I only know doctors that are girls. So is that something that only girls can do? And we just kind of really bring it back to the children and say, well, has a boy doctor who has a girl doctor? And, you know, hands pop up for both. And so really not trying to get it to come from me saying, I've seen this, but bringing it back onto them and saying, well, have you seen this? And ideally, it'd be nice if it really does go in the everybody section. But if we don't have evidence of that yet, I don't really want to push it and say, well, you haven't seen it and it's true. And so that's something we can go back to later on, which luckily hasn't happened, but an equal way of both sides, which has been pretty fun.
Awesome. And I keep thinking like how this has shown up in my own classroom with teaching music of like, boys only like rap, girls only like pop songs. And I'm like, well, I know several people that like all of it. How many of you actually like everything? And a lot of it, and it comes back and forth of, oh, well, I like this too. And then, it allows for students to explore different types of music that they otherwise wouldn't have been exposed to because they would have thought, oh, I can't like this because of X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, especially, you know, I think you have the younger ones too, don't you?
Yes, I have grade 1, 2, and 3, but not kindergarten.
Yeah. And so I think because they are pretty egocentric in a lot of ways, just developmentally, which is fine. And so they don't really totally know what's happening with their peers and what they like so many times versus like that grade 3 is when it really starts to be like, I notice what that person's doing. And that's where those kind of, I think really just starts to divide a little bit more about, I'm part of this group, I'm part of a community versus I do what I want to do when I'm a little bit littler. And so I'm really hoping that these conversations that, you know, we had a little boy reading some book in the library and he said something about, can't remember what it was about, but he said, I talked to my sister yesterday and I told her that, you know, sometimes people might tell you things that, and they don't like what you're doing, but you can still do it anyway if it makes you happy. And just kind of, he made that connection to like, well, you know, maybe I want to paint my nails, but somebody told me that that's not appropriate. We really bring it into, it's not always easy. You know, it makes it sound easy in the classroom that it's an everybody thing. Mm-hmm. But then we really say like, you know, if I go out and do a lot of guys paint their nails or have long hair or wear dresses and they don't really see it. I'm like, if you would, you know, go out outside of a really nice bubble, people might really not like that. And there's going to be comments said to you that make it really hard. And so I don't want them to think that it is as easy in our little bubble. I was a little hipster kid in high school. And then, you know, I wore my tight girl pants and we'd be walking around downtown Chicago and it'd be, take your sister's pants off. And we had those comments. Yeah. And I was really lucky that that group of people didn't care so much about what other people thought of them, which is, you know, why we all kind of clicked together too. But I really want them to know that it's not an easy conversation. And there's been a few good books too saying, you know, I think it was My Shadow's Pink was the correct name of it. But, you know, at first it was kind of a little bit uncomfortable. And then, you know, dad comes around to accepting it too. But I love the books that show that diversity, but it's also great to see that struggle as well. So trying to point out that maybe all my friends really like that rap music, but that doesn't mean that I have to do that.
Exactly. And that was the conversation that kind of we tied in was, well, my mom wants me to play flute, but I really want to play the trumpet. And it was, but I'm a girl. And I was like, well, I know some pretty amazing trumpet players who are women and are just can play the trumpet exceptionally well. And I was like, so in your terms, it would be an everybody thing.
Yeah. And like, it's nice having, you know, YouTube and things be like, well, I'm a little bit scared because if they are having that identity thing of, well, it's pretty common. And, you know, one thing is we have stereotypes and there's commonalities between those. And so it's kind of hard sometimes. You're like, looking at the boy books too, there's so many boys in dresses, which is super cool. But I'm also like, that also doesn't happen terribly often. Yeah. And so looking to try and really bring that library into like, dad's taking care of children. I brought my daughter from Japan to America. And then all the airplane students were like, well, where's the wife and the mom? I'm like, she's in Japan. And like, how are you doing that? I'm like, how am I not doing this? And, you know, my wife's from Japan and she had a surgery for a week. And I had the 8-month-old baby and everyone's just in awe that I could do this because I'm a male. And it's like, well, I want to break those stereotypes. And I'm really hoping to get some more books. We have a fantastic librarian. Just be like, well, dads can cook. Dads can take care of children and kind of not always go to the extreme, but just really point out that we can do everything and they can do everything and kind of creating this nice big, big gray area versus black and white. There's no right and wrong. It's just, we like
exactly like our society of believing in a dichotomy isn't existing anymore. It's actually breaking down as we can see it, especially with COVID really highlighting that we are all in this together and we can all do many different things and that we really don't need to be thinking or caring so much about what other people are doing if it's not impacting us.
Exactly.
In your classroom, you mentioned several books so far. What are some of your favorite books to help other educators who might want to start breaking down their own stereotypes in their school?
One thing that's been super awesome because we had International Women's Day, we just got a book called Strong is the New Pretty, and it's just got pictures of girls just being girls, which is messy, and water polo. And so they actually said today, so well, why don't we make a book about us doing those things? And so I've actually started to capture some of our students just, you know, asking some of the girls, well, what makes you strong? And someone say, I can roll over, I can jump. And just, we're going to try and compile these in year one in our kindergarten classes. And then, you know, potentially open up to others as well. But so that's just awesome to just say, you know, it's not me wearing a dress or it's not me just playing football, but just me being a human being, mm-hmm. which is pretty fantastic. I love My Shadow's Pink is really, really great. We've got 10,000 Dresses by Marcus, I think, Ewert. Jacob's Room to Choose by Sarah and Ian Hoffman. We got Dress Like a Girl by Patricia Tott. We've got Papa, Daddy, and Riley by Seamus Kirst. We've got Ambitious Girl by Mina Harris. And I've got, hold on. I loved his books. We've got over here The Maiden and the Princess by Daniel Hack and Isabel Galupa. And so he has a few other ones about princes and things. And it was just really, really awesome to see, well, that men can marry men and women can marry women and just really breaking down those barriers as well. And it makes me so frustrated to see what America is doing at the moment. But those are the books that, you know, I have right here next to me at the moment. Off the top of my head, there's so many more. And on my Twitter, which you'll share a little bit later, is some of the books that I've been reading lately, and they're just super powerful.
That's amazing. And again, I just think about my own upbringing and how much more open my eyes would have been at such an earlier age than having to wait till I go to college to experience so many different types of people and different, such a group of diverse people that I went to school with. If we had educators more like you when I was growing up, that was really looking for not so much black and white.
So I'm really hoping that, you know, later on, it's like, you know, we can do it in our classrooms and hopefully those conversations carry on. And
yes, for sure.
And like, you know, we live in this nice international bubble. And we're talking about some of the older teachers who have kids in college going back to home and just being like, whoa, rural is so small in those other parts, like these little pockets of people that didn't travel and experience things and like kind of that little fish out of water. And
I'm sure as somebody who's been overseas for a while, when you go home back to your neck of the woods, it's a reverse culture shock.
Oh gosh,
yeah. As well.
Moving home would be really odd.
Agreed. I don't think I could do it, to be quite honest. I don't know if I could move back home thinking about it.
You'd have to have that little expat life of, you know, it's very different.
Yes, yes, it is. With all this experience and such that you have, Michael, do you ever think about maybe writing your own book that breaks down gender stereotypes?
Ideally, that would be fantastic. But truly, honestly, I really do not like writing. The idea of writing a book, the idea about talking, like creating an audio book, sounds really cool. The idea of writing a book is just not on my particular list of things to do. But, you know, since COVID and, you know, these online PDs opening up online has been something I'm like, well, I like the things I'm doing in the classroom. And, you know, play is being a big conversation too, which we'll maybe tap into. But I'm like, I want to share these ideas. And it's been really great to kind of have those conversations through like something like this too, where I'd much rather talk about ideas and not just me share what I'm doing, but then also get a lot of feedback from people who are participating as well. So I like the back and forth versus me just writing something down.
Michael, you're preaching to the choir over here, because I've had so many friends ask me, when are you going to write a book? When are you going to write a book? And I'm like, I don't necessarily really like writing. I tried having a blog. It didn't go really well, but I love talking with people, chatting, conversing, the back and forth aspect. And my really amazing friend, Jason Reagan, said, then how did you think about starting a podcast? And I was like, no. And so now I have, and it's the best thing I've ever done. It is so much fun. And it's fun going back and forth with each other and really getting somebody else's perspective instead of just being alone in a room writing.
Yeah. It's like running these sessions it's the reason I really like it so far now too, that I've done it, you know, each two or three times. Like, it's so reflective and I'm able to reflect on my own ideas. Mm-hmm. And then we have that share time at the end and someone's like, well, what about this? And what about this? I'm like, that's what I wanted. I wanted someone to look at it from a different perspective. And devil's advocate is a wonderful part of the world at times. And it's like, well, why are you doing that or doing this? And I like those questions that make me really, I'm doing this to be reflective.
Agreed. And it also makes us just such a much better, well-rounded practitioner when we can really express our own why and not just the how and what of it all.
Right. I can communicate my idea, but can I explain why too? I'm like, well, why am I making all those choices? And I actually didn't know why. And then I'm like, well, I have to explain this to somebody. So I really need to figure that out.
Yes, agreed. So you mentioned a little bit about play, and I know, having seen your Twitter posts about play and making and exploration, that your kids are really purposefully making and incorporating play throughout their entire days. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yes, I think the making really ties into my first major of tech ed. And I'm like, well, I went from like playing with 3D printers and whatnot into going into the kindergarten classroom. And so tying in that really fun stuff with that, which has been fantastic. But just seeing how powerful play is, and teaching back home and having, you know, pre-K and K, and it's like, it was just a battle every day because I'm doing these things that aren't developmentally appropriate. They didn't see purpose. And then coming abroad and not having those district things to weigh you down and be like, well, we can play together. And it's like, we can do so many of these things. We started our year online, and it's teaching to read online was less than ideal. And so I didn't know how long we'd stay open. So we did a little kind of like this teaching to read power workshop where we kind of powered through of the things I can't do on Zoom. We have to do that a little bit more when we're at school in case we go online again. And so unfortunately, I went a little bit away from the play because I'm like, I have to teach you a few things where I know you're paying attention instead of playing with slime next to your Zoom. And so we're doing a writer's workshop, and it wasn't really going very smooth. I was getting frustrated. They kept asking questions. And then I'm like, okay, well, there's a really good article the other day, which I can't remember either, but it's basically like, well, we can't just put numeracy and literacy down. Like, it's a big iceberg. Those are the big things. We can't skip all the things under. And I'm like, well, why isn't writer's workshop working? And I was like, well, I need to play again. Like, we had that month of crash course, and like, we really got to get the kids playing and building those social skills and independence, because I see the independence as a struggle during writer's workshop, which is a big cognitive load. Let's throw it into their play and see how that's going as well. And then we've been really trying to link those things together. And so I was like, well, let's get some of these projects going and let's talk about working together and growing ideas from day to day. And so I'm like, well, what's not working in writer's workshop? How can I build that skill in their play where they're motivated? And that way, when it's time to write again, I'm like, look what you're doing in your play. You're researching ideas, you're collecting evidence, you're communicating what you want to say. We're doing all of those things in our writer's workshop as well. And so they're having a context of something they know they can do. And we're throwing that into their writer's workshop. So instead of saying like, well, this isn't working, I'm just going to keep pushing through. Well, what's under that iceberg that I can then focus on? And how can I put into context of them playing and use like my documentation to highlight of like, you're being independent. Look how you solved that problem on your own. When we go into writer's workshop and we want to spell a word, we've got, you know, our little charts around the room and whatnot. You can do that on your own too. Them really being able to make those connections because they've done it, they've seen it, they felt it. And it's improved writer's workshop so much. And so
that's amazing.
I can't teach it in that core subject sometimes. I'm like, well, why can't I just tie it into their play? And, you know, using for math is, you know, if we're counting how many times the car goes up and down the ramp and it works or not. I'm like, well, if we're going to handle data, why not handle the data they're creating in their play? So using all those play evidences as mini lessons for everything else. So I'm like, I want to do that too. I'm like, I want this to be authentic and meaningful to you. So let's do that.
Agreed. And also, what an amazing way for them to start connecting learning across multiple disciplines, but also to see that learning is all around them, no matter what. It doesn't have to be, this is math time, we only do math. This is reading, we only do reading. And this is play. That it all just weaves back and forth.
Yeah. I think the big thing for these kindergartners is like, writing has a purpose to communicate ideas. And so, you know, building this rocket ship the other day, and, you know, we played with these little bits, which can make sounds and lights and whatnot. And they're like, well, we need an emergency button because we did our research and they've got emergency buttons. And so, you know, they create this little button that makes noise and they put it inside the rocket ship. And of course, some other kid comes over and just starts pushing it. And they go, don't push that. It's the emergency button. And they're like, well, I don't know that. It's just a button. I'm a 5-year-old. I want to push a button. And like, what skills do we have to help communicate that idea that you've created? And they're like, well, I could write things down because of, you know, our conversations before. Well, then let's write that down. Let's make something that says emergency button. And maybe if you don't want them to push it, put a little hand with the X through it, and getting them to write because they want to write, not because I want them to. And it has a purpose because I want to communicate my ideas, which is that's why we've decided to write things down, to pass that on to others. So looking at the core reason of that, it's been really fun.
That does sound a lot of fun. And it also sounds like it's so well connected and thought out. And it's just, it breaks down that stereotype of what is play. Play is not just chaos ensued. It's purposeful, planned engagements that allow students to manipulate all things around them in a constructive way.
Yeah. And so later, you know, the PD been like, well, how do I link in? I don't want play to be separate. I really want it to be interdisciplinary, transdisciplinary. And so bringing all the evidence in together has been, and it's not easy. It's a lot of extra work and you've got kids doing different projects. And so kind of navigating that's been busy, but fun. And so got a wonderful team to talk out the ideas with. It's been really great.
Oh, that's exciting. So for people who are wanting to incorporate play more into their classroom and giving students that opportunity to really just explore without really teacher-focused content, what are some natural things that you have experienced that allows that to happen more readily?
I think the biggest thing is kind of just, we feel like we have to be so engaged with them all the time, which is part of being a teacher. But the biggest thing that it really started to do is just not talk to anybody for like, you know, one of their play sessions and just sit and watch and really, really listen. And I felt really guilty because my first school, so you have to be talking to them all the time. And that just kind of became instilled in what I have to do. I'm like, I can sit here and just watch you and really see what's happening. And I know as early as teachers, people are really beginning to like provocations in me setting things out. I think I'm okay at that. I don't think I'm fantastic at it. But one thing that I think is really helpful is like, I take that time to be a researcher and listen to what they're doing and then use that to set the provocations and kind of, you know, or to take the pictures and the videos and be like, you're doing these things. And what skills are we using? What concepts are we noticing? And so just really taking your time to watch the kids and really listen to them. And if you hear, you know, with the cars and collecting data, it's like, I just heard them say, it worked, it didn't work, it worked, it didn't work. And I'm like, well, you know, data handling, something that we need to cover pretty soon. We could use tally marks, we can use counters and looking at all these different ways we can keep track. And I'm like, well, that's my mini lesson for tomorrow. I'm going to take a little video. I'm going to ask you, well, what do you notice them doing? That it worked, it didn't work. I'm like, well, which ramp's better? And they're like, I think that one. I'm like, well, how could we really figure that out? Which one did work better? So tomorrow what we're going to do is we're going to go and try that. And we can watch you and we can collect the data for you. We'll take a little video. We'll put it on the board. We'll talk about using tally marks, putting sticks in bowls, and just all these different ways to collect it and organize our ideas. And so they loved it because they got to help each other. And like, that's me. I'm being the teacher.
And don't students just love being the teacher?
Oh, yeah.
It is their favorite thing in the world. I really have. So like we use Seesaw here and I have so many kids who know how to use Seesaw better than I do. So we've coined the term Seesaw experts or Seesaw ambassadors or just basically student versions of the legit Seesaw ambassador. And I was like, well, you know, Susie over there is a CSUN ambassador. Why don't we go ask Susie? And they're like, oh yeah, it's very great to see students help each other in a constructive way.
Yeah, and things just bring to that power of like, it's not onto me. And so, you know, sometimes we ask, well, how many, when we do our, you know, count how many kids are here. And then in the beginning of the year, it's like, well, how many teachers are there? And, you know, it's me and our AA, like our TA. And then, you know, as it grows throughout the year, we ask that question, well, how many teachers are there? And they start to notice, like, well, like, I know he taught me before. He taught me before.
Ooh,
she taught me before.
So cool.
Like, well, I'm a teacher too. Like, it's, they're my teachers. And kind of seeing that kind of evolve throughout the year is always really exciting.
Oh, that's cool. I'm stealing that idea. That's a really cool idea. Thank you for sharing that. So, Michael, what happens, you know, all of this sounds really amazing, and it is amazing. There's no doubt about it. But there's got to be places where this just fails or something doesn't work or it's just ensued chaos. What do you do at that moment?
I think recognize it. And so we were talking at lunch today, and somebody made some kind of little mistake. And like, what you have to start doing is just make mistakes all the time, and then nobody really notices. But I'm like, well, I think we just always talk like that didn't work. And then there'll be times with the kids, I'm like, well, did that playtime session work? Or like, that was a really big fight. That, and just really recognizing and honoring like that didn't work. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's a lot of things that do not work all the time. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, there's that sort of like, you know, you're in the ditch when you're learning and whatnot. And like, we're in the ditch all the time. Like, we try stuff and it doesn't work. And I try and cook and it doesn't work. And I try and teach you math and that lesson didn't really work because you weren't interested. Yeah. And so really me just being super open and accepting like that didn't work. And, you know, I think this is the reason why. I'm not really sure, but if we can connect the reason why, then next time I know I need to try something a little bit differently. But there's definitely playtimes where like our goal, like today we were doing Chrome Music Lab to try and figure out how we could make kind of little homemade speakers with what's it called? Paper towel tubes and cups and this.
Yeah.
And they all just sat and I'm like, well, let's try this and this. And the Chrome Music Lab, tap, 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 tap. And so at the end, I'm like, well, who? One group made a really cool speaker system. And I'm like, did anybody else try? And they go, no. And I'm like, well, you know, why do we think that happened? And then I didn't think they too much figured it out. But I'm like, I noticed that we really didn't give you, haven't tried this in 2 weeks. And so I think what happened is you're really, really excited to just play with Chrome Music Lab because there's so much stuff on there.
So true.
I think, and what we need to do is we need to give you a little bit more time to explore this on your own before we try and add something into that. So I'm like, I need to understand that I need to slow it down a little bit, give you time to explore. And then, you know, maybe tomorrow we had a chance to explore today. Tomorrow, let's try and do that. You know, our girls with, I'll say M and H made this thing and I can share that. And that'll be that nice little push of like, you're being the teacher, you've created something. You didn't get enticed into the world of iPad. And so you can then motivate others to say, well, I tried this. And that'll be that nice push. And so that was an example an hour ago.
Well, as a music teacher who uses Chrome Music Lab extensively because of distance learning, I am fully well aware of the awe factor of Music Chrome Lab.
All those buttons.
Oh, they love it. And it's also funny because I love seeing some kids who are very like nervous to touch anything because it all lights up. And then I love seeing the kids who will light up every single row so it doesn't really sound like anything.
No, but I made a rainbow.
But I made a rainbow.
What did the rainbow sound like?
Right. And I was like, I would hope a rainbow sounds a little bit better than that. Like, it's just really loud at that point. Oh, that's so funny.
Give you time to explore before we keep moving on. Because otherwise, you're just, that person wants to touch the fuzzy thing before.
Exactly. Oh, Michael, thank you so much for coming on to Recess Duty today. Tell our listeners out in the world, where can they find you if they want to connect with you to continue learning to breaking down stereotypes and the purposeful play that you do in the classroom?
On Twitter, and which will be just Twitter at Michael Pelagi. And awesome job to connect. And I'm excited to learn more from all of you as well. So feel free to tweet out and share some ideas and ask some questions.
So exciting. And those links will be in the show notes below, everyone. So, Michael, we asked all guests here at the Recess Duty, what do you remember about recess growing up?
I will check the temperature here in Bangkok at the moment. It is, let's see, to make the connection a little bit stronger, it's 34 and it feels like 41. And so at the moment is playing King of the Hill in a big, you know, 2-foot snowstorm from the Midwest. And then coming out with just melty cold fingertips from those gloves. So I am not a winter person. I am so happy to be here. But just, you know, one of my best friends before said, winter is a place you go to for the weekend. And I would be totally fine if I could just had a snowstorm for 2 days and was back to the heat.
That's so funny. Winter is a place you visit on the week. No, I agree. Having grown up in Kansas, I remember those Midwest winters that are just really wet and cold and frigid. And those gloves, because once they freeze, that's like carrying around bricks. And it's just like, and sometimes you can't really get your hand out because your hand is kind of like frozen in the glove. And yeah, they're no, it's no fun.
Do not miss that. So I'll take my swimming pool instead.
Oh, that's funny. Thank you, Michael, for coming to this week's episode of Recess Duty. Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss our next episode. I'm Levi Allison, and I hope you have a great day of learning, everyone. Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to Recess Duty. Make sure you subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes. In the meantime, please share this podcast with other educators so they can join the fun. And that is the end of our Recess Duty.